This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Damage Report Lockdown Edition. We're in day 5 or 6. They're starting to blend together, but we're going to try to spice things up with some interesting, important, and in some cases even horrifying news. And the we is me, but also importantly, we know how much you've wanted a JR Wednesday, and we figured, why make you wait until Wednesday for it? And so, JR Jackson is here. JR, how's it going?
It's JR Tuesday. I saw once we talked about this, someone mentioned, hey, is it Wednesday? Because you know what? As you said, John, I'm not sure how many days deep of house quarantine we're in at this point. I've lost track already, and it's definitely under 10. And the fact you lose track under double digits is a bad thing, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, last night my wife asked me, it's Monday, right? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, the days, it's like, matter. It's not the weekend, but it sort of is. The days are more similar than they were. And yeah, it's just enough days to, for them to start to blend together, and enough for the government to be like, haven't we done this enough, which we'll turn to in just a few moments. Thank you, everybody who has already joined the live stream. We do appreciate that. As always, if you could hit the like button, share the stream, that way as many people as possible know about it. If you are new to this one, ring the bell so that you get notifications. Also, this is a heads up to power users who want the highest quality TDR experience. I don't know when this is going to go into effect, but I read this morning that YouTube is going to be defaulting content on YouTube to 480p, which is obviously not high definition. High definition is still available. If you go in, click the gear icon on the screen, you can activate, you know, 720 or 1080 if you want, but they're going to be like dropping you down, so you have to voluntarily change it to HD. That might not have already gone into effect, but just in the future, if you join one of our streams and stuff looks really bad, that's why. It's not my fault. I swear, it's not.
We'll see about that, bro.
We'll see. And look, over the course of this show, JR and I are going to talk about a number of different things. We've got day two of the effort to throw you into the meat grinder, getting you out of this quarantine and then back into helping Wall Street recover. We've got 10 coronavirus myths that we're going to bust. Garbage people return. So we've got a lot planned. JR, you ready?
I think so. We'll see. It's been a few days. I had the back of last week off. Let's go.
Yeah. When you take a few days off from doing the show and then all of a sudden you have to do it, it's like, wait, how did I ever do this? And Name Withheld, thank you for that super chat. And Name Withheld said, hi, JR. So there you go. I don't know. JR, can you see those super chats?
Very, very, very small. But okay. I can see them.
Okay. Okay. With that, why don't we jump into it? My fear this week, what I think is the biggest story, is that after just a few days of not even a national lockdown, just a number of states doing it, that the government's willingness to continue with this in the face of what looks like increasing economic fallout is already waning. And yesterday we showed you the first indications of that, and I made the prediction that they were going to be done by the end of this week. Well, now we're in day two, and it's looking even more like that will be the case. Take a look at this tweet from the president. Our people want to return to work. They will practice social distancing and all else, and seniors will be watched over protectively and lovingly. We can do two things together. The cure cannot be worse, by far, than the problem. Congress must act now. We will come back strong. So we're gonna have a lot more, but that seems pretty clear. Like, sure, we're gonna, like, something seniors, but this is starting to hurt stocks. We can't continue this for even a second week, I guess, at this point. JR, what do you think? Do you think I'm being paranoid? Or do you get the signals that he's about to pull out of all this?
There's not even signals. This is a direct language, it seems like. The only thing that's vague about what he's saying is what they're doing for seniors. We'll take care of seniors beautifully, lovingly, gloriously. What does that mean? How so? But the one thing you do have a concrete definition of is we're going to get back to push you guys back to work and we're going to ignore everything that's going on that we already had to admit is really happening after we said it's not happening. So, I mean, the credibility of these folks in this administration is shot so far down. There's nothing they can say that will allow anyone to believe anything else. So I was just saying this yesterday to myself. I was like, you know what? The fact that they've got some professionals on their team that may have an approach to something like this that is helpful actually doesn't even help, because every time I see anyone standing near this lying president, they lose all credibility with me. Anything anyone says, if I haven't seen them or know of them before, I'm like, oh, this guy, he must be lying. Strictly because he's standing next to him. It's been deteriorated to a point that you can't recover.
You know, or if they have any credibility, they might not last long. So, I mean, we were going to do a thing on the Trump versus Fauci. We didn't have room for it today, but I mean, that guy could be gone this afternoon. Like, we might not hear from him again because he dared to correct the president when he's just lying blatantly and repeatedly.
He's trying to bring that back with a couple of interviews and stuff, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah. You know, so we have a lot more of this. I want to play just a couple of excerpts from yesterday's press conference. We had Trump sort of alluding to what I'm talking about here. And so let's see if I can do this in a way that doesn't cause echo. Okay. So here is the president on what he thinks is the actual threat to people's lives.
You have tremendous responsibility. We have jobs. We have people get tremendous anxiety and depression, and you have suicides over things like this when you have terrible economies. You have death definitely would be in far greater numbers than the numbers that we're talking about with regard to the virus. So we have an obligation. We have a double obligation. We have a great country. There's no country like it in the world, and there's no economy like it.
So effectively what he said is he's talking with people back in New York, and he's saying that a lot of people are going to die, not from coronavirus, but they're going to die from the lockdown, that people are going to be depressed because they're not working. They're going to be committing suicide. He's been talking to people on Wall Street, and that is indeed what he's worried about.
That's who he's talking to. So again, I'm glad you brought up that part, because we did preview these, and the guy is talking about how he used to be part of this Wall Street situation and people are going to be all sad and depressed and Wall Street people. Again, it goes back to the only those folks are the ones that count. Only those folks are the ones that matter. Yet before this, as things started, people that didn't have enough resources to get to hoard things the way many people were, or even have the mobility to get and prepare for this, none of those people are mentioned, or regular minimum wage to middle class to lower middle class workers. Nobody was considered in those situations. Only when the Wall Street folks start telling you, hey, Donnie, we're depressed. We're a little bit sad. I'm sick of being at home in my 12,000 square foot apartment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, okay. It's as we've noticed, we've seen even celebrities, athletes, all these folks that we see that they have a certain level of connection to us during this. Mm-hmm. But we still see that they have a better opportunity to do it comfortably than others.
So he's going to be asked here who he's listening to during all this. And here's what he had to say.
JP Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, they're all predicting a pretty dire second quarter. So who are you listening to? Where's the brain trust? You have all these medical advisors.
I think we're listening to many people. I mean, that was my world. I know many of those people. I have many people that are friends of mine, some enemies also, by the way. But it's been a good world for me. I like that world. I like those people. They're tough and they're smart.
Okay, so there. Wall Street is my world. I like those people. I like that world. It's been a good world for me. His brain sort of shut down a little bit there. But I think that he was being pretty honest. He is definitely listening to those people. And that's why the big theme of this show, and indeed the shows throughout this week, will likely be Wall Street wants people to go back to work. Not necessarily for them to go back to work, by the way. They need people to go back to work. They can just hunker down. They can stay in their bunker. And if they get sick, or even if they suspect that they might have it, they will get access to treatment. They don't have to worry about that. But sacrifices must be made. Not by them, but by you.
Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure the remote working can continue to happen for many of these Wall Street types, at least especially the upper, higher Wall Street types that don't want to risk their lives over something like this. You can get people to come and work for you and help re-spark your business. But you doing it? No. I'm too important. I'm one of those job creators. And if I get sick, I mean, what's happened to you? This situation, I really hope, if nothing else, it breaks this feeling of parent and child that the rich and uber rich and corporations have over the rest of America, to stop thinking that our existence depends on how much they can, how many crumbs they can drop to folks. Yeah. So this is shown explicitly. Without us, they don't survive. And now they're telling people, come back to work because we're not surviving. Not, hey, are you okay? It's get back to work because we're not surviving with this. We have the more power. We have the power on this as soon as people realize it. If you don't realize it and continue to think this parental group or this rogue group that says that they're about you when really they're destroying you, maybe we can institute some kind of change. Enough people realize how bad the separation of powers is.
Yeah, yeah. I guess as one weird, this isn't really a silver lining, but just a thing that is becoming very clear from their behavior is, as a lot of people have said for a very long time, at the end of the day, the asset they have is their workers. That's it. Mm-hmm. They can't do it themselves. Bill Gates seems like kind of a nice guy. He can't do it alone, can't build many computers on his own. They do need us. And unfortunately, for us, they don't necessarily need 100% of us. They'd be satisfied with 97%, 98%. Sure. Really fast, before we get into more of it, I saw there's a super chat from Kevin who says, the focus has been the economy from the start. The reason we are in such a dire situation to begin with is his refusal to grasp the gravity of the situation and the choice to downplay it from the get-go. Absolutely. I could not agree more. Poopa Woopa Gus, thank you for all you do. I know, thank you for all that you do, and thank you for the support. So really fast, here's a little bit more, because I know some people might still think that, he's saying this, he's frustrated, he's venting or whatever. But behind the scenes, there's, according to Sanjana Karanth of HuffPost, the president said he wants to get back to business soon, though he didn't give an exact timeline. He said it won't be 3 or 4 months, as some people were saying, and a lot of people thought originally. The people Trump is referring to there, of course, were the nation's health experts. They're not like some guy. The president pointed to the viral videos of spring breakers in Florida ignoring the social distancing guidelines as justification for relaxing them, which is insane. If the issue is that too many people are going to get it at the same time for our health system to be able to process those. Baked into the concern, the reason we're doing this, is the idea is that even if we do it, it's not going to be 100%, and that some people are going to violate it. That is not a reason not to try. That is a reason to try even harder. And
think
yet,
about,
Trump,
oh, goodness. Go ahead. Go ahead, John. Think about the way that this administration approached just immigration, illegal immigration coming to this country before he even got into office. Think about that approach. If there was this many, as far as those spring breakers on the beach in Florida, if there was this many Latino immigrants in one place like that, he would freak out, pull his hair, and say national emergency, which he already did, and also touted caravans coming. He even gave fake numbers of people coming up in large groups just to fearmonger and help help push his racist agenda. But in a situation when Americans are sitting there on a beach against the safety rules that have been put in place, or at least guidelines that are put in place, it's, I get it, they need to relax. But you don't get when people are fleeing famine, torture, death. You know, you don't get that. But you get when people want to go off on spring break and have some beers and party.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And thinks that's a justification for giving up. And I mean, even so, like, again, it's one thing hypothetically if it's him. I mean, that's a horrifying thing if he wants to pull us out, because to the extent that any one individual can cause that to happen, that would be him. But it isn't just him. A senior White House official told CNN, quote, I don't know anybody in the building who is arguing that we should keep going the way we're going. Everybody here is pulling in the same direction. And so God only knows, with the people he's left in positions of power and influence around him, those are going to be the people that are toadies, the ones who are going to tell him that he's right. And here's the thing. We're gonna do myth busting later on. But the idea that, hey, we've done 6 days, isn't that enough? I want to put it in a bit of perspective. So this is a tweet from Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who says, the COVID-19 pandemic is accelerating. It took 67 days from the first reported case to reach the first 100,000 cases, 11 days for the second 100,000 cases, and just 4 days for the third 100,000 cases. These numbers matter. These are people whose lives and families have been turned upside down. And so let's take a look at this. This is a chart. I understand you probably can't see the numbers. But that is the curve in the U.S. of total coronavirus cases. everybody watching this stream, I want you to look at that, and I want you to tell me if you think we're good and we can just go back to normal. That's not upside down. I didn't manipulate that. That's what it actually looks like. And some of them are already tapping out. It's been like 5 days. Yeah. It's been an extended holiday weekend, and they're already just, so 3 million people died.
This is so illustrative of the way we are as Americans. Like, we have a few days and we're too restless. First off, it's not just restlessness. Everyone's got cabin fever. Everyone wants to step out and go back to a normal life. There's no one that wants to do it this way. But if we, after a few days, we're saying, oh my God, we got to get back to this because other folks need to benefit from my risk. It just doesn't seem to make any sense, but they expect that because that's the way it's always been. I want to go back to that. I think it was an administration official that said everyone in the building is in agreement about going back. It's not just Trump. Am I right? That was an official.
That's what it appears. It was a bit of a vague statement, but that is what it appears to be saying.
Yeah. Okay. So when you're hunkered down with a bunch of people who are having to be loyal to a guy who's absolutely not loyal to them, or actually is only self-serving. I'm sure that the Jim Jones commune, if you interviewed several of them beforehand, I don't think you'd have found very many who would have said, yeah, this is a disaster, man. This is a problem here. No, they were all part of the cult. Yeah. They were all ready to drink it. And if you asked them beforehand, they were down. I'm sure, yes, there were some that weren't, but they weren't speaking up.
Yeah.
Because that had been a problem underneath the cult leadership.
Trump seems all in on going back to normal, with normal being the United States minus a few million people. But it's not just him. Over the past 48 hours or so, Fox News has taken a hard turn to supporting the president's position on this. Take a look at this.
We've quarantined much of our population because informed people thought we had no choice. It was a decision, whatever else it was, that was made in good faith. But there's another side to that decision. The shutdown has come at a terrible cost for an awful lot of people. Millions of Americans have lost their jobs. An economic crash clearly looms in the near distance, and that's not a small thing. It could change this country forever, more even than the virus itself. Americans have never been more grateful for their doctors and their nurses and their scientists, and for very good reason. These are the people working and exposing themselves to great risk to save us from the scourge. But the truth is, you can't just let epidemiologists run a country of 320 million people, just as you would never turn America over to a team of economists. Not because they're bad people, they're mostly good people, but they are specialists, and their range of vision is too narrow. As in everything, you need balance.
I mean, that, there's a lot in there. They're specialists, the epidemiologists. Their range of vision is too narrow. Look at them. They're only focused on millions of Americans not dying. We need balance. Yes, we don't want everyone to die, but that stock market, though. And like, he says it in this measured tone, and he says healthcare professionals are great. And so he seems like he's being reasonable, but what he's calling for is what every responsible healthcare professional, someone in a position of power in the WHO, the CDC, is saying will produce a worst case scenario where millions of people die. Disproportionately older, millions of people will die. And that's what the very reasonable Tucker Carlson, that people love to twist themselves into pretzels to give credit to, is calling for.
Yeah, again, he brought up how we can't have a singular approach to this with the professionals in this particular field, but economists?
You wouldn't have a team of economists just running things for the same reason.
Seems like we kind of, not even a team of economists, it's a team of greedy capitalists looking to run things. That's what we've got. Mm-hmm. This comes from the same folks who supported a push for a president to say we need a businessman president in a country where other things happen besides business. And let's point it out, every time we've seen anything else happen during this guy's term, that do have to do with business he sucks at, and that doesn't have to do with business, he just denies its existence, especially if it's something that has to do with science or anything that he can't understand, he can't wrap his head around. What he can wrap his head around is making money for himself, mm-hmm. hoarding, things like that. So that's the president we put in place, and we've seen the results. It's exactly what we expected.
Yeah. And I mean, I could go on for a long time about Tucker Carlson. I don't want to. So let's move on. Ed Henry, said the best estimate of the mortality rate here in the United States is 0.7 or 0.8%, as in less than 1%. That is not what I've seen. Now, every life matters, and you don't want to minimize any of them. But when the mortality rate is that low, what is the balance? By the way, what I love is a sentence that starts every life matters and then has a but in it, which implies that maybe not all lives matter as much necessarily.
Yeah, but what is,
again, what is the balance? And here's the thing. It wouldn't morally be different, but in terms of optics, it would be a little bit different if like an elderly homeless person was like, you know what, we need some sort of balance. Someone who is actually like maximally at risk in this situation. But rich people who are in clean rooms effectively, walled off from all of the actual threat, saying we need balance, that's not balance. First of all, going back to the way things were, where you guys dominated literally everything, all policy was crafted to satisfy what you wanted, going back to that, it would not be balance. But us sacrificing ourselves at ever-increasing numbers so that you, while being fully protected, can feel a little bit more comfortable about how your stock portfolio is developing, that is not balance, not in a moral sense, not in any sense that I can understand.
Yeah, it's... again, it's the sole response. It's the sole focus that they have. It has nothing to do with saving people or anything like that. Now, people that have been around him also are worried about this, you know, bringing us back, hurrying up and doing this. There's been specific and constant, pleas for this to go differently. So also, I just saw this morning, so his ex-Trump official, he used to be with the Homeland Security, Tom Bossert. So he was the advisor to Trump during this whole thing. But he's not there anymore, so he can say things like this. He tweeted this. It's Thomas Bossert, formerly with Trump's Homeland Security, not Obama's, not W's. The case fatality rate is the percentage of people infected that die. People saying it's only 1% must acknowledge the total number goes up in real lost lives. This is like he's saying this, and it's supposed to be like a groundbreaking, eye-opening thing. This is common sense. Now, he continues, if we prematurely return to open society without controls, more infected people means more total deaths. 1% of 66 million equals 660,000. So you can talk about all the numbers of it's only 1%, but we haven't even hit the number of infected rate. And if we go back out and start spreading it further, then the infected rate's going to go up. And guess what else will go up? The death rate. You idiots. I don't know. It's weird that I have to say that, or that even Bossert had to say that. It's common sense. I don't get how this is missed.
Yeah, and look, right now, you can guarantee that there are people who are dying in every state in the country, not from coronavirus because they were never tested because the tests aren't available or they weren't provided. Lots of people would love to be tested but can't. But they're dying of things that look sort of like the flu, but they're not the flu. And we won't know anytime soon how many of those are. Maybe at some point, a bunch of academics will do some sort of study. They'll track down all of this and they'll try to get an idea of how many people actually died. But as of right now, we can assume, and look, and they're all saying that the numbers that are being reported, both the number of total cases and of fatalities so far, is probably 5 to 10 times lower than the actual number because we just don't know. And before we even know, they're going to go back to normal. And by the way, this is from the guy who loves saying, until we figure out what's going on, we need a complete and total shutdown of anything that doesn't infringe on my life in the slightest. That's effectively what he's saying. So we can't shut down to figure out how many people actually have this thing right now. We're just going to go right back to normal. So I would say that the numbers would spike following that, but they're mid-spike right now. Like, we need to let it level off. And don't listen to me. Listen to the doctors. Listen to people who actually know.
The only reason you're saying what you're saying is because you are listening to people who know what they're talking about. Like, it's okay to listen to someone who knows what they're talking about, actually has the best interest of their specific field and expertise in mind. This, again, back to Tucker Carlson, this being the people who are experts in the field telling us about their expertise. That's kind of the point. Two other things. So Trump's pushing some a new comparison as a reason to go back and just spread it across the country even further. He brought up car accident deaths and how high that is, how it's way higher than what flu deaths or whatever he said. I'm not even sure what those numbers are because he didn't give any. But so he said,
should we bet? I think are around 50,000 a year in the U.S. Give or take 10,000.
And he said, so we shouldn't ban automobiles because drunk drivers kill people, or that, you know, whatever, people that are under the influence of whatever kill people in America. So you know what we do have in place? There's these rules. There's these laws. They're called DWI, When you get pulled over, you get arrested, you get fined, and then it goes on your record. And the more you do it, you lose your privilege to drive. There's things put in place to deter these things. We used to have a huge drunk driving problem, and it's lessened because of the activism and the laws put in place to prevent it. We do things to prevent the number of deaths from going up, and yep. It's worked. Crazy yeah. How that is, you know? What is this other example? Flu. Oh, there's this weird, crazy thing that we call the flu shot. It's a vaccine. And people who a lot of times rail against it or don't do it, or anti-vaxxers, there's a big battle going on in this country, Donald Trump. And people are battling people who don't want to do things like vaccines because it'll help spread it and more people be infected. More people have a potential to get sick and die. Yeah. Crazy how that works. We don't have any of those put in place for this. We have to set it up first. It has to be worked out. In the meantime, chill out.
Is there going to be an election in November? I know right now a lot of the country is on lockdown. It looks like how could that possibly happen? But plans are being put into place to provide a situation where people might feel comfortable in voting and not getting in massive lines, big crowds, and potentially exposing themselves to the coronavirus, assuming, and we probably should, that that is still going to be an issue in early November. And so right now there is a proposal that was unveiled by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Monday that called for billions in grant funding for states for election administration issues and a national requirement of 15 days of early voting, no excuse absentee voting, and that registered voters receive ballots in the mail in an emergency. The Brennan Center has estimated that a robust election protection plan related to the coronavirus could cost as much as $2 billion to cover ballot printing and procurement, postage, security staffing, poll workers, and voter education campaigns. And so, look, I think that you could probably go further than that. I want to make sure that literally everyone is able to vote and has more than enough time to do so. But considering, I mean, the debacle we went through with the last round of primaries where, you know, Tom Perez and the DNC and various governors were saying, just get in line right before we go into lockdown. We need to be ready. The election needs to go forward, but it needs to go forward in a way that doesn't expose anyone unnecessarily to these germs.
Yeah, sadly, I mean, something is going to have to be done. But I fear that no matter what is done, even some of these put in place to make voting easier or even allow these places to stay open, there's just generally going to be a bit of a fear from people to want to go out and do something like this. And it's, sadly, I think it might benefit Trump, you know, to keep a guy in office. When numbers are low, we know how that works in public. And numbers are just going to, it's just naturally going to be lower. Again, even if things get shored up to a degree where some semblance of regular life by November, we've now had probably all of spring and probably parts of summer completely derailed from people's decision processes. They just kind of already were. And money will just be like, yeah, I'm not really sure what happens, happens. Those numbers might be a little too high.
Yeah. So yeah. Look, I think the most important thing is get, like, first of all, get mail voting so that people don't have to leave their home. Mm-hmm. That will reassure a lot of people. Give them a period of 2 to 4 weeks to make sure that they have time for it and that can all be processed and everything. That's really important. And then continue that system going forward. Like, if anything positive that can come out of this would help to defer some of the terror and horror that we've been dealing with. So if coming out of this, everyone has an actual right, which they should have always had under a democracy, to be able to vote, have their vote be counted, have their vote matter, then that would be a good thing. We can set up that system. And the Brennan Center is saying that it might cost $2 billion. Man, in their bill, they're handing $1 trillion close to it to corporations and to Wall Street. Like if you can do that, then you can definitely spend a couple of $1 billion to make sure that we have an election. The Olympics just got postponed. That's never happened in peacetime before. Right. An election, so far as I know, in our lifetime certainly has never been postponed in any way. It doesn't have to be if we start to prepare for it now and if we make sure that all of the money is available. We can have the election and we can make sure that no one suffers from it.
We hear these numbers, man. It goes back to our Stockholm syndrome. We hear these numbers and we begin to think, oh, that's too much for us. You know, it's just not specifically that sentence, but the sentiment is, wow, $2 billion just for elections? I don't know if we really need that because we need it for other things like that. This isn't that important. Hey, us actually having a voice in our country isn't that important. $2 billion. We hear those numbers and we think it's huge. The numbers that we're donating, handing out to the folks that have helped destroy many aspects of our lives, we don't blink. But when it comes to actually having to enhance our lives, that's why it goes back to everything we've had when it comes to Medicare for All and student loan forgiveness. We're like, do we really deserve it? What do we do for this? But we assume that people who've done absolutely far fewer things for this, they deserve it, but we don't.
Yeah.
This isn't a problem. I'm telling you, man, you see that number, and I guarantee you people, regular people, will really cringe a little bit, like, man, $2 billion just for elections? No, more.
Yeah, yeah, if it needs it. And yeah. And also, I have been following the, they got a little bit closer, supposedly, to one of the bills getting through the Senate yesterday. That's going to continue today. Chuck Schumer says they're on the 2-yard line. Yesterday, they were on the 5, which I've been told by Emma is close to scoring. I'm joking. Anyway, but one thing that's supposedly being worked on is another round of changes to unemployment. For a period of 4 months, they're considering up to $600 additional dollars per week. Again, all of this is based off of the income that you were making beforehand, and it hasn't been passed yet, so don't go like celebrating at all that there was progress, actually. But that is one of the things that's being worked on, at least.
We'll see. I mean, there's lots of back and forth, and we hear 2-yard line talk from Schumer, and I don't know. It depends on what's thrown in there next, because now the pressure, as we've seen from other cases, Elizabeth Warren was specifically put on, was, I guess, fingers were pointed at her. I think she's on Bloomberg. Yeah, she's on Bloomberg TV, had a battle with a host that was saying, what are you going to do now that you Democrats have decided to derail this whole thing? And she had to tell him, hey, listen, this isn't a Democratic thing. This is when we're trying to get things for the American people done right. So yeah. Now that pressure is being applied to Democrats, they know a Democrat. They fold. And they'll be like, whatever's in it now, it's okay. It's fine. Steve Mnuchin's going to have his slush fund, which I'm glad they fought against. But let's see what else is in it now, too, because there's no way that this set of Republicans is going to stop at the first step.
People seem to already have moved on from what I thought was a pretty big story last week, which was that Senator Richard Burr, Loeffler, a number of senators apparently were briefed fairly early on about coronavirus, the possible effect it would have on our country, the economic effect it would have on our country, and then just coincidentally sold off millions of dollars in stock, saving themselves substantial sums of money that could have been lost once the market went down. That seems like it should almost certainly be illegal, but everybody has already moved on. Most people anyway, not everyone. And so the good news is that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and two of her House colleagues announced on Monday plans to introduce a bill that would bar members of Congress from trading individual stocks, promoting a renewed push for the Ban Conflicted Trading Act after it was originally introduced in the Senate back in December 2018 by Senator Jeff Merkley. She said, members of Congress should not be allowed to buy and sell individual stock. We are here to serve the public, not to profiteer. And another one of those, putting forward the bill, this is Raja Krishnamurthy, said, the recent news reports have made it clear that it's past time to end the potential conflicts of interest created by members of Congress and their top staffers trading in stocks while making decisions affecting their values and receiving sensitive non-public information through government service. Our legislation will prevent members from trading individual stocks and holding positions on corporate boards to help ensure that Congress is working for the American people and not their own stock portfolios. So this doesn't necessarily go as far as I would like in that there should 100% be investigations of the senators who've already done this. Others who almost certainly have should be identified. We're not there. But at least this could stop this sort of situation from happening again in the future.
The problem is that this makes too much sense.
So you think there's no dead on arrival? Makes too much sense.
Yeah, because that's the way things work. So anytime you have to point out, again, we've been working in common sense for this JR Tuesday on Damage Report. apparently, if you tell elected officials that are supposed to be serving the public and their electorate to not profiteer and to not have to trade stock in the meantime, that should be part of their job. But again, that common sense is going to be seen as crazy and radical, guarantee you, because, hey, I'm an American. How come I can't profit from the fact that you guys elected me and I get to do whatever I want to screw you over and benefit myself? That's how we got who we have in office right now, because he's not the first one to do stuff like this. And I'm sure there's countless others that are trying to hide under the veil of coronavirus outbreak to not be discovered for what they've done. So you save money or you go ahead and cash out your money in the meantime, while telling the rest of the country that there's nothing to worry about on top of it, because there's that aspect too. There's not just they got their insider numbers and other people who maybe aren't trading in the stock market don't get to benefit. That's the First illegal hurdle. The next one is then telling the general public, maybe many of them don't have any interest in the stock market, that there's nothing for them to worry about health-wise. Continue to do what you're doing. This is all a hoax brought to you by Democrats, North Korea, China, Italy.
Whoever.
I'm not sure what else they threw into the pile, but it doesn't matter. A bunch of scary people that aren't like us.
Yeah.
Don't believe them. Believe us that nothing's wrong while we take our money out. It's too many layers of evil in this situation.
Yeah, and from the social media activity I've seen from some of those who've been accused, they feel safe. They feel like they've gotten past this thing. So I'm certainly worried about that. There has to be investigations. I don't know why that's not being talked about. Like, I understand we're all very worried. The relief bill is very important. We got to figure out the elections. We got to make sure that as few people die as possible. All of that. You can have, like, AOC could be the point woman on this thing. She could lead the effort to do these investigations, to pass a bill, to make sure that there is accountability. I mean, if we're going to rightfully be watching out for, like, corporate profiteering, price gouging, corruption with the relief bill when it comes out, makes 100% sense, then those who are writing the bill, those who can write in loopholes for themselves, who can set up a situation that advantages industries that they're either on the boards of or own stock in currently, we have to be at least as much on the watch for that. And so far, I'm not seeing that from any of those representatives.
Police aren't going to be held responsible if the police are exonerating the police. That's all it is. Yeah. Hey, nothing's illegal. I mean, these are legislators. So, you know, they're going to make, the degree to which they're protecting each other, I don't know, but it's also the perfect storm as far as enough people are concerned about other things, rightfully, that this can kind of fly under the radar. And I think that's part of the problem. And I understand it as a valid problem because, you know, we got to worry about trying to police these guys that are doing illegal activity in the middle of a crisis. We don't have the capacity to do so. So maybe after it's all said and done, hopefully we can go back and go after the people who did these things. Don't hold your breath for that.
Everybody is worried about coronavirus, and there is a ton of misinformation that is floating around, that has been floating around from the very beginning. And a lot of it just isn't true. And so one of the things that we want to do here at the Damage Report is to spread as much accurate information as possible, but also to bust the myths that are already starting to spread. JR, we've got 10 of these that we're going to go through. Before we jump into that, though, I am curious, have you been hearing anything, perhaps on social media or anything that strikes you as inaccurate or crazy that's been bothering you?
I've actively avoided it. I gotta be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, I won't read what anything anyone says that's not on an official, reputable government website. Like, there's government officials that I won't listen to, as we've already talked. But, you know, you have to see something directly from California Health Board or the CDC, you know, those places see the information. But so any of the craziness that's happening, I actively avoid. Not sure.
Probably a good call.
I did hear that. Is either sense of smell or hearing is a new symptom? Did you hear this?
Oh, yeah. It was something about if your sense of smell has been destroyed, then that is an indication that you have it, which I don't have that as one of the 10 that we're going to deal with here. But I have a feeling that is probably not going to end up being true. And so perhaps that'll be on the next installment. But with that, why don't we jump into some of these? The first you might have heard is that masks don't actually help at all. The truth is that viruses can also transmit through the eyes, and tiny viral particles known as aerosols can penetrate masks. So a mask is not necessarily foolproof. You can get it in other ways, things that are not covered by the mask. And if the mask is not seated correctly, like with the N95 masks, people are trained in how to make sure that there is a good seal to make sure that nothing gets around it. But masks are effective at capturing droplets, which is a main transmission route of coronavirus, and some studies have estimated a roughly fivefold protection versus no barrier alone. So the idea that masks don't help at all is a myth. The idea that if you have a mask on, you can't get it is also a myth, by the way. They are an important tool for protecting people, especially healthcare workers, but they are not the solution. But they are some.
Yeah, there's lots of things you use for protection that if you don't use it correctly, of course, it voids the protection. Number one, condoms. We know how that works. Yep. That's why there's the sex education classes that, I hate to make it political, but many people in the country don't want us to have, where people teach folks the right way to have protected sex. Because if there's many people who don't know what the hell they're doing, and if they apply it incorrectly, it doesn't matter that you tried to use a condom. You didn't use it right, so it didn't work. Same thing with this in some aspects. But I mean, I've seen people out and about that are worried about the way people wearing masks and it freaks people out. It should be somewhat comforting because it's a layer of protection. I get that it's different, but it's a layer of protection. Whether or not it's foolproof or not, it's something.
Yeah. Let's move on to, this is sort of similar to the sense of smell thing that you were talking about. The myth is if you can hold your breath for 10 seconds, you're okay. That was actually spread on Fox News a couple of weeks ago by Geraldo. Turns out it's not true, according to Dr. Robert Laguerre-Atmar of Baylor College of Medicine, who says when someone has an acute viral infection, it can be difficult to take a deep breath and not cough because the airways are irritated. Being able to hold your breath for 10 seconds doesn't mean someone doesn't have coronavirus. So, like, that should really go without saying, but
wait,
like, okay, something could be sort of an anecdotal test. It is not foolproof, and that is not a way to know or not know that you have coronavirus.
Okay, because I'm
not. They're wasting a lot of money on these tests, if that's all you need.
So this is an indicator of whether or not you have. Okay, because I thought they were saying, if you're out and about and you see someone and you pass by them, hold your breath for 10 seconds as you walk by them and you won't get you. I thought that's what this was saying. Like, oh. I see you walking down the street and I'm like, man, that guy John looks like he's infected. If I hold it for 10 seconds, then maybe you won't splatter it in my face.
Yeah. Well, like we said, even with a mask, you can still get it in your eyes and all that. That said, I'm not saying I don't hold my breath when I go by someone, but I also stay more than 6 feet away. So bear that in mind.
Again, you're going with at least trying something.
Try anything, you know?
But you don't go around telling people then that this is how it works.
Exactly. And that's why on all of these, this is not my opinion on the myth. I'm going with doctors and health professionals. So one is, this one was spread not by Geraldo, but someone arguably as important, spread by Donald Trump. The myth is that COVID-19 will fade as soon as the weather gets warmer, which sort of misses the fact that on our planet, some parts of the world are warm, even when other parts are cold. I don't know why people don't understand that, but... Anyway, Dr. Mohamed Sajadi of the University of Maryland School of Medicine says the virus might have a harder time spreading between people in warmer tropical climes. But even if that's so, the fact that humans have no immune experience against the virus means it will probably continue to spread during the Northern Hemisphere summer, according to other experts. So some more difficulty in spreading is not the same thing as cannot be spread, and it's not the same thing as cannot devastate someone. So... we might see something, but it's present right now in hot climes as well. And so that is potentially something that could help a little bit, but it is not a solution to the problem we're in.
Well, let's not forget it's March 24th. We only have about a week before April's here, like our president said, and it's over.
Yeah, it's over.
Once April comes, I mean, the coronavirus has a calendar and it X's off each day. Like, oh, I got 5 days left. Damn.
Yeah.
Then I'm done. This is supposed to end at the beginning of April because that's when it right?
Yeah. Well, he also said, stay calm. It'll go away. It'll go away. So everybody just has to stay calm. If you work yourself up into something, that could be a problem. Let's go to another one, also involving temperature, but this is the myth that hand washing only kills coronavirus if water is hot. According to Dr. Michael Chang of the McGovern Medical School, when washing hands with soap and water, it's really the mechanical scrubbing action that's cleaning your hands. You can use warm or cold water. You have to be sure you wash or scrub long enough, at least 20 seconds, and completely dry your hands. So, look, if you feel more comfortable using hot water, use hot water. But you can use either. What you have to do is you have to make sure that you have something that can actually kill it, and you have to do it long enough, repetitively enough, for 20 seconds to make sure that it dies.
Can I give a real quick, not even 20 seconds of my hand washing process?
Let's see it.
Yeah. So you start with the normal, right? You start with the palms, then of course go to the back. That's normal. Most people just do that. Ow, you got to get each finger. I wrap that one. I'm doing this way faster than I do. All 10. And then another clasp. Then the back again. Then I'm done. And it's frustratingly long. But I mean, I think it's a small price to pay. Just saying. That's just my process. Maybe I'm missing some points. I don't know. Maybe I need one of those little brushes to hit my nails.
That's probably not
one thing I'm missing, actually.
Yeah, we need a Bitsy, like your makeup Bitsy. We need the hand washing Bitsy. And if you get bored doing 20 seconds of hand washing if it feels like time is passing really slow. I would bet that time passes slower on a respirator. Bear that in mind. Okay, here's another one. And this is, there were a few infographics put together by the WHO to spread, to fix some of these myths. I think that they designed it basically so that you could spread it on social. So one was, can spraying alcohol or chlorine all over your body kill the new coronavirus? And they say, no, spraying alcohol or chlorine all over your body will not kill viruses that have already entered your body, which I think makes sense. Spraying such substances can be harmful to clothes or mucous membranes. You know, getting it in your eyes and your mouth, you probably don't want to do that. And so look, yes, using like hand sanitizer on your hands is a good idea. If it's in your system though, you can douse yourself in as much Tito's as you want. It's not going to cure you. So just don't waste your resources doing that.
Yeah. And once it's there, it's there. But yeah. And I guess, I mean, a lot of it, you have to keep your mental state calm too. So if, if it helps that you wash your face with extra cleaners, okay.
I guess don't still anything dangerous in your eyes, basically.
Yes.
The next one, are hand dryers effective in killing the new coronavirus? And they say no, hand dryers are not effective in killing COVID-19. They say instead, frequently clean your hands with an alcohol-based hand rub or wash them with soap and water. Once your hands are cleaned, you should dry them thoroughly by using paper towels or a warm air dryer. But the heat of the hand dryer alone is not going to kill the virus.
Again, man, these myths, I'm catching them halfway through because they make so little sense. So I thought that meant wash your hands and instead of drying with like a paper towel, use a hand dryer. Mm. They just mean dry ass, dirty COVID-19 hands. Stick your dry, dirty, freshly touched door handle hands under a dryer and that's just do it. Who came up with that?
Somebody's saying it if the WHO is responding to it. Okay. Another one. And I sort of understand where this comes from. The myth is that the coronavirus can be transmitted through mosquito bites. Apparently, there is no evidence to suggest that it is being spread by mosquitoes. Other things can be, and nobody likes to get bit by mosquitoes. So, you know, do whatever you need to do to not get bit. But you're probably not going to get the coronavirus from a mosquito.
Yeah, let's not forget, there's other things that are going on too. I think this is worth saying because I'd start to forget too. Just because we're worried about this particular thing doesn't mean that other germs are gone. You know, just a general rule of thumb. Just because you have to be avoiding this, make sure you avoid other things, sticking your face on or anything else that even though it may not necessarily be infected with this particular virus, you might be getting sick in another way too. Number three, can you bring up that graphic with the mosquito?
With mosquitoes? Yeah, here you go.
If I see a mosquito that looks like that flying at me, I'm petrified.
I think that mosquito looks more scared of you than you are of it.
He looks freaky. He's got one of those, what was the mask movie with Tom Cruise?
What? Mission Impossible?
No, where they're like, it's,
you're talking about,
Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah.
Yeah, that mosquito was definitely at a high price orgy. Anyway, where did this video get spun off the rails? We're talking coronavirus. I will throw in one just because I've seen people sort of asking, like, I have antibiotics left over. Should I just take the antibiotics I have? No, this is a virus that does not cure viruses. That's not the solution. Another one, again, sort of related maybe to your sense of smell one. The myth is that coronavirus patients will experience a drowning sensation, and that's one way you can self-diagnose. Many patients will not have a nasal infection at all, actually, let alone one that produces anything that could be described as a drowning sensation. That's not a myth that I've seen, but apparently it is going around. And these sorts of like easy ways to know if you have it without being tested, please do not rely on these things. I know that it's likely that you can't necessarily get tested if you want to, but don't do these sorts of things and then feel like, well, I was able to hold my breath or I don't have a drowning sensation, so I guess I'm okay. I can go hang out with grandma. Don't do that. Rely on doctors, please.
Yeah, I mean, there's also differences in a certain kind of cough that people have versus a cold cough or a flu cough, all those things. But you know what? Again, this is an offshoot of people's fear and not having enough tests available that they have to start self-diagnosing because that's what people just have to do. It's out of dire need. And then you have other problems that are built off of that, like misinformation. Yeah. It all begins from just giving people the right information from the beginning, which we failed at.
Yeah. One, and I understand where this is coming from, the myth is that COVID-19 only kills the elderly. Now, most people who are not elderly and do not have underlying health conditions will not become critically ill from COVID-19, but the illness still has a higher chance of leading to serious respiratory symptoms than seasonal flu. So you might be less likely to die, but it can still kill younger people. It has, even as young as children lately. And in some of these states, something like 40 or 50% of the cases currently hospitalized are people who are very much in the sort of like millennial category. You can still get sent to the hospital. You can end up on a respirator. And yes, indeed, you can die. You are at less of a risk, but that is not no risk. And so don't believe that like you're, you know, Superman and you can just go do whatever you want.
I remember being 23 years old, and I guess the thought, I don't remember, I mean, if this happened, I was always slightly paranoid, so I don't think I'd have been one of the spring breakers. But there was a sense of invincibility, and that was in physical things. It didn't have to do with disease and viruses and stuff. So I get the mindset, but don't you see reality right in front of you? Number two, there's so many unknowns of this virus that we don't know how it's going to affect people later in life. If you're carrying now, Maybe it's so many unknowns. I don't want to give any scary doomsday scenarios that are completely unfounded. Don't know anything else about it. So at this point, just try to avoid it. I'm not saying that, you know, if you've got it, you're doomed, but you don't know how it's going to affect you. Say you're 23, you get it now, you're 56. Hey, it's somehow associated with you in some makeup. Again, probably not the case, but it's best just go ahead and follow the first place.
Yeah, and you can always transmit to other people. So like Danny DeVito said on yesterday's show, you also have to worry about transmitting to other people. You could potentially get through it, having no or almost no symptoms, but you could still be transmitting it to other people.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, you have to think, I mean, if you don't, it's weird to say, if you don't want to think about yourself, think about others. Hmm. Absolutely not the way we operate in this country. So
that's true. And the final one, and it's a little bit of a downer, the myth is that a vaccine could be ready in just months, but indeed the incremental trials required before a commercial vaccine can be rolled out are a lengthy undertaking and an essential one to ensure that even rare side effects are spotted. A commercially available vaccine within a year would be quick. And look, Trump doesn't care about the side. He's been very, I'm not just like trying to read his mind here, in his addresses he said, why are we worrying about these sorts of side effects when we can just roll it out? People need help. And so maybe he'll tell the FDA to just approve literally anything. But even then, it is going to take quite a while. So if your view of what the government should be doing, what we should be doing, is contingent on or like tied to a belief that we only need a couple of months to get through to a vaccine, that is almost certainly not the case. And so you need to gird yourself for what could be a longer process to fix this thing.
Yeah, we have to consider the side effects. I mean, if you look at those any of those commercials, when it comes to stomach pains, to restless knee syndrome, hair loss, there's side effects for any kind of medication. So especially when it comes to something as serious as this, don't know what those side effects could be. You'll see the fine print and quick talking guy on the commercial going, side effects, then you're going to die. So after all that, you know, that's just from those medications in this series. So yeah, let's take it serious.
100%. For some time now, as the number of coronavirus cases continues to spread, people have been sounding the alarm about a potential emergency. And that is for communities of prisoners, this is likely to be an absolutely devastating illness that the government is almost certainly not taking as seriously as they need to. Some prisons, perhaps even more of an issue. Rikers has been listed as one that is likely to experience some really negative consequences of this. And indeed, at least 38 people who either reside or work in the New York City jail system have already tested positive for coronavirus. That number is almost certainly higher today, by the way. The number of people being monitored in contagious disease and quarantine units more than doubled from 26 to 56 in less than a week. Jail officials said they expect the number of infected inmates to rise exponentially. And so in a sec, we're going to have a little bit of information from inside of Rikers. But JR, I wanted your reaction to this. How much faith do you have that the government, either New York or the federal government, is worrying literally at all about prison populations and coronavirus?
Yeah. Well, two levels to this story is the okay. So these numbers may come out This, I think, is an enclosed a scenario that can at least show us how to work on a broader scale if enough people are around each other, which is, of course, as we mentioned earlier, many people in this administration want to have happen. So when these cases spread and then exponentially spread in one small enclosed place like a prison, specifically Rikers here, it shows us what can happen on a broader scale. How come we don't see this? If we pay attention to it, maybe we'll learn something from that. No, we won't do that. Number two, this will be ignored, at least from nationally. I mean, people working directly with it, they can't ignore it, but they're prisoners. Let's just keep it real. That's what we're going to say. They're prisoners. They did something wrong. There's murderers in there. Hey, you know what? Who cares what happens to them? That's exactly, it's our approach. That's why we toss people aside in prison all the time. That's why when we convict someone wrongfully and they're already there, we go, we already got the conviction. He's off the streets. We'll ignore the fact that he's not supposed to be off the streets. But that's our approach. If they're in prison, if they die, they die. That's just how we work here. So it's not going to go anywhere. And it's sad. It's a sad state for our country.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're one of the people watching the show, and I doubt there are many of you who are like, I really don't care about those people. Well, remember, the guards, too. They are going to be exposed to this because they have to be in close contact with, in some cases, like Rikers has 5,294 people. So far, it says 75 people have been released. That is something. But obviously, prisons have got to get as many people out as possible, as many as they safely can, to get the numbers down. Because if you're supposed to have some sort of social distancing, it's impossible in a place where people are literally crammed together and you have thousands of people in a small area. And for a little bit more information on that, Scott Hechinger, he's a public defender in Brooklyn. He's been on the show before. He had a number of tweets after talking with someone inside of Rikers about the conditions there. And I want to give you a little bit of an overview of what he said. You can go to his Twitter at twitter.com/ScottHetch to see much more. But he said, just spent the last hour talking to another colleague about Rikers conditions. Quote, it's like an effing slave ship. It makes me want to effing cry. They can't even wash their hands. It is insane that this day and age we treat human beings this way. This is shameful. And I'm going to summarize a bit of what Scott talked about in the thread. So people trapped on Rikers right now are sleeping close enough to reach out and touch the next person. There's one toilet for every 29 people trapped on Rikers right now. After one of the people in their dorm tested positive for coronavirus and was taken out, Rikers staff didn't clean the general areas. People are being housed with others with flu-like symptoms, and there's no recourse. And I also saw, and I apologize, I don't remember for sure if this was at Rikers or another New York area prison, people were asking to be tested because they had flu-like symptoms, and they were pepper sprayed by the guards there.
Oh.
They're worried that they're effectively locked in an area where this disease could soon be rampaging through. And they're not being tested. And in fact, they're being attacked if they point out how inhumane this is.
They're a lower level of society. It's straight up. It's who cares. And again, even these guards or whoever's in charge of the protocol and responding after someone was taken out of the area, who made the decision not to do anything about that area? Mm-hmm. You know, because again, as I mentioned earlier, if you don't care about others, at least care about yourself. We're gonna reverse it now. How is it that you're working at this facility? And you don't want at least things to be up kept enough where you're not affected. I'm talking about like guards and employees of the prison now working there. You're in there too, bro. So for you to go ahead and be like, yeah, they're just prisoners, whoever, whatever, let me pepper spray them and this problem will be solved because I got to keep them back. That works out. It doesn't work out for you that way because then you're affected from this as well. I don't get the logic behind it.
Yeah, one of the main reasons I want to make sure that we do this video is just to remind people that this is another aspect of this, because I'm sure the vast majority of people are not even thinking, even good people who do care about these lives won't think about it because they're dealing with themselves and the area around them. But we know that we have the most incarcerated people in literally any country. And so that's a lot of people who don't receive good healthcare, obviously. And these numbers could end up being devastating. We're already seeing it jump up in just a few days. There is one bit of not good news, but I guess the silver lining is that for Rikers Island and other New York City jails, there was bail reform that the state instituted in January. Because of that legislative change, people charged with most misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies are not being jailed before they go to trial. But in some areas, they haven't had bail reform. And so theoretically, if you get, you know, if you get charged with something even minor and you can't make bail, then you could be locked up in an area that could soon be just devastated by coronavirus. And it's another way that we're not only sort of criminalizing being poor, but hypothetically, it could be really bad for your health coming up very soon.
It's going to get worse. And this is just one prison. I mean,
yeah.
How many do we have? As you mentioned, we imprison more people than anywhere else in the world. So it's everywhere.
If you've been watching cable news, you're probably not shocked to find out that the trash has been piling up and now it's time to take it out. This is garbage, people. Okay, so I've got my garbage can right here, and JR, I think we agree on this one. I saw that you had pitched it for the main show. This is an individual. Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick. So he was on the news recently, and he is all aboard choo-choo the train of going back to normal, and if some people have to die, that's okay. But take a look at the way he expressed those thoughts on Tucker Carlson last night.
And, you know, Tucker, no one reached out to me and said, as a senior citizen, are you willing to take a chance on your survival in exchange for keeping the America that all America loves for your children and grandchildren? And if that's the exchange, I'm all in. And that doesn't make me noble or brave or anything like that. I just think there are lots of grandparents out there in this country like me. I have six grandchildren that what we all care about and what we love more than anything are those children. And I want to, you know, live smart and see through this, but I don't want the whole country to be sacrificed. Message is that, let's get back to work. Let's get back to living. Let's be smart about it. And those of us who are 70 plus, we'll take care of ourselves, but don't sacrifice the country. Don't do that. Don't ruin this great American dream.
So you're basically saying that this disease could take your life, but that's not the scariest thing to you. There's something that would be worse than dying.
Yeah.
So that is effectively him saying, 70 plus people, they would be happy to sacrifice themselves, obviously, and in theory, anyone who's 70 plus who doesn't believe that, I guess you're not either sufficiently patriotic or sufficiently love your kids, your grandkids, I guess, they should be willing to die if it means us getting back to work a few weeks earlier. And Tucker Carlson teed him up with that question, does that mean that, like, dying is not the thing you're most afraid of? And he says yes, because a temporary issue with the stock market is scarier for him, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who almost certainly will be insulated from the risk he's going to throw onto other people. That makes him my garbage person of the day. And by the way, for the person in the chat who pointed out I have a crappy printer, I have a replacement toner cartridge, but I don't know how precious those are going to be soon. So I'm trying to get for as long as I can with the ink I've got. Anyway, Jared, what'd you think about Dan
Patrick? I'm trying to figure out how sacrificing anyone that's 70 plus to come out, what is that, the driving workforce that we're looking to get back out here and do the same thing? To get back to work where? To restart the economy? Mm-hmm. Where does that, how does that help? I just need the logistics. Maybe I missed his further explanation on the rest of the hour he had with Tucker. I don't know, but I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Do you have that answer?
So you should definitely be fine with dying. Of course, I guarantee he's not going to be offering himself up. Let's do a little experiment, by the way, because this is going to be a game. It's going to be a fun game. Not. Everybody on Fox News has pivoted to some people might need to die. A couple million people, a couple of percentage points might die, and they're willing to make that sacrifice. That's the thing that Dan Patrick is adding, is that they're willing. They love their grandkids, and they value the economy more than their own lives, so they'd be willing to sacrifice themselves. Here's the thing. Those grandparents are not the ones who are going to, you know, send everyone back to work, that they're going to stop all these regulations. It's going to be people like Dan Patrick, people like Trump, governors around the country. So it is very, very easy to say 3% of the country should die and that's not a big deal. I want those people to point out, of the people they know, let's say they know 100 people, I want to hear three names. Three names that you would sacrifice, that you'd be comfortable dying. Maybe you don't know that many people. Name one name, someone that you would be willing to sacrifice on the altar of our economy and its stability. They don't want to do that. But that's what is going to happen, is those individuals will die. We don't know right now who they're going to be, but if we follow this path, hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans will die. That's fine by Dan Patrick, supposedly. I guarantee they're hoarding supplies and food and medicine to make sure that no one he knows is going to be among those number.
I'd like to expand this thought experiment you've got, John.
Let's do it.
We should push it also to that you're also within a group of 100 people, Dan Patrick. And then your friends get to choose which three, and you hope they don't choose you, because now it's on you. Because now you start asking your friends if how expendable you are to them. Mm-hmm. Do they have to choose these three people? What if you're on the list of three people? Dan, you're too old. You've lived a nice life. Get out of here. Yeah. You might not feel too good watching your friend point his finger at you and go, I want him. He's dead.
Yeah, and like I alluded to, like if you're watching this and you're 70 plus. And you feel like, well, I don't want to die. I'm here to tell you that is perfectly acceptable for you to think. You should be able to expect that you're going to get through this thing and that the government is going to do what's necessary to save you. Like if a foreign military was invading across our southern border, would we just say, they've only taken 3% of our territory? Sure, they killed a few million people, but like, come on, we're not going to like shut down theaters. Let's keep things going. Let's keep this economy chugging along. And yet, this is what we're hearing. And look, today it's Dan Patrick. God only knows tomorrow. The message has been sent out. The narrative is established. The right is ready to just chug along because they think, one, economically it's in their interest, and two, if they can get people to think that this is what's needed, that this is acceptable, then it could help Donald Trump in his reelection bid.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely to try and set a new norm. A new norm of thought process that you can, you're willing to sacrifice yourselves for the sake of these other people. Absolutely wouldn't do the same for you in a million years.
I am very pleased to welcome back to the show congressional candidate running in Georgia's 7th congressional district, Nabila Islam. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Yeah, thank you for having me again.
Glad to have you back on. You are the first candidate, as I was telling you before we went live, that we've had on with this situation that we're dealing with. And I'm very interested to find out how all of this is affecting you. I mean, you are treading new water. What is it like campaigning with the current state of the country?
Yes, it is very different. I was actually one of the first candidates in my state to suspend all in-person canvassing because we just didn't feel like it was safe to put my staff, my volunteers, and my community at risk of this virus, which is very contagious. And so being a grassroots candidate and having our activity, most of our activity door-to-door and face-to-face, it's been a real change. We are moving everything to being virtual. And so we're doubling down on text banking and phone banking. We're having our first virtual town hall coming up so that people still are accessible to our campaign and can ask me questions right now. We're working very hard to make sure that folks can still learn about the campaign, even though we can't have face-to-face contact.
And I'm assuming that all of the candidates at this point have probably shut down all face-to-face campaigning, canvassing, door-to-door, all of that?
Yes. Everyone, thankfully, is on the same page, and we're trying to contain the spread by practicing social distancing. So, my campaign, we're checking in with staff virtual via Google Hangout every morning and, making sure that people are, are safe and healthy at home.
Okay. And so you said that's with staff?
Yes, with staff. And then we check in with volunteers as well.
Okay. Are you able to do any kind of virtual town hall or anything like that? Like, I'm trying to get an idea of, obviously, there are the sorts of things that you want to be able to do while campaigning. Much of that is cut off. So how are you adapting to try to get your message out to as many voters as possible?
So we're doing virtual town halls.
Okay.
And our first one is coming up this Friday. And then we're also going to be doing them every single week. We're doing a video on Instagram every single day. making sure that people are informed about the campaign and can learn more about the campaign. We're trying to recruit more volunteers. We right now have an active universe of 100 volunteers that are texting through people. Yesterday, we texted about 5,000 people to let them know about the election. Our primary election is coming up on May 19th, so it's about 2 months away, around the corner. And so we want people to be well-informed and making sure that they understand when the election is and how they can vote and who the candidates are.
You know, I'm curious. I assume, like, so when I'm putting together my rundowns for the show, basically all of the news, like 99% of the news, is obviously about the pandemic. I'm assuming that when you're talking with voters, probably that's, you know, by far most of what they're thinking about. And so, you know, you obviously, I'm sure you have some policies you'd like to see implemented to deal with that, and I'd like to hear about those. But you also have a suite of other policies that existed long before the pandemic. So how are you adapting the way that you're communicating with your potential constituents when there's this one big issue that's driving so much attention?
No, absolutely. I mean, people are very concerned about locally what's happening with the coronavirus, like what we're doing to contain the spread, what our governor has been doing, which hasn't been much. You know, prior to this happening, I'm the only candidate in the primary that's been talking about Medicare for all, that healthcare is a fundamental human right. And right now, more than ever, folks are paying attention to that because people are worried that if they can get a test, which is very hard to get one in the first place, how they're going to pay for treatment if they get tested positive. So people are very concerned with that. Folks are now being laid off their jobs. My mom lost her job last Tuesday, and she's very worried about how she's going to be able to pay her mortgage that's coming up on April 1st. So, you know, people these are the issues that people are talking about right now, is how they're going to keep the lights on, how they're going to get put food on the table. These are very uncertain times, and unfortunately, our president and our governor here, Brian Kemp, are showing a total lack of leadership in terms of how, you know, taking this seriously, and that, you know, families and working people are being hit the hardest by this.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking here on the network for the last week or so about how if a few of these progressive policies like Medicare for All were already implemented, that would make the transition to dealing with the pandemic a lot easier. I'm curious, are you seeing like an uptick on people's interest in policies like that, considering the severity of the threat that we're facing right now? Are they more interested in potential changes like Medicare for All than they were before the pandemic?
People are absolutely seeing the necessity of making sure that everyone is able to see a doctor. Folks are now paying attention more than ever to our healthcare system because they're realizing that it's broken. And so people are very concerned about how people are going to be able to seek care and the treatment that they need in order to get better. So most definitely, this is on people's radar more than ever.
Okay. And so you mentioned that the primary is May 19th. That's 2 months away. We can't say for sure what things are going to look like in 2 months. Are there currently any plans, any contingency plans for potentially either postponing the election or for switching over maybe to entirely like mail-in voting or anything like that? Or is the idea right now still to go ahead with day of in-person voting?
So our state actually decided today that we're going to do a massive vote-by-mail election. And so I think it's understood that it'd be irresponsible to ask many people to go vote, elderly people to go vote in a time where we have a contagious, deadly virus. And so what they're doing now is, I just read it about an hour ago, is that they're going to send a piece of mail asking people if they would like to request a ballot. So you would have to take this piece of mail, put a stamp on it saying that you want to request a ballot, and then they will mail you a ballot, and then you have to mail it back with another stamp on it. So I'm hoping that people during this time, during this pandemic, have stamps at home. So
yeah,
we're going to have to get very creative about making sure that folks have the means to be able to vote easily. And so I'm going to make sure that my team and I pay attention to those needs.
Yeah. That plan that you just sketched out seems like a perfect solution to the problem if you believe the problem is that too many people have been voting in past elections and you want to get those numbers down as low as possible. That's a great way to do it, that people need to send multiple letters in 2020 just to register their vote. Now, you're in Georgia. I know what the situation is like locally. I've talked with friends in New York and in D.C. You seem to be saying that overall the response from Georgia's government is not up to what you would like to see in terms of like social distancing, locking things down. How would you rate it?
Like two. So our governor is not taking this as seriously as people on the ground are hoping he would. I think he's, you know, Donald Trump really helped him in his election, and I think he's just following lock and step with him. He's basically told us, encouraged us to wash our hands and to, you know, offer prayers. He also yesterday put a shelter in place for elderly people on the medically fragile. Unclearly fragile means, but it's just been very poor. We're number four in the country, leading in deaths. We're top 10 in the number of cases that we have here in Georgia. And so in order to contain the spread, we need a shutdown. And our governor, unfortunately, is not taking that seriously.
The potential constituents that you've talked to, do they seem to be taking it seriously? Do you get the impression that the perhaps mixed messages they're getting from their governor or from some media might be leaving them in a position where they don't feel like we need more extreme measures inside of Georgia?
Look, so people that are very self-aware of what's going on and doing their own research, yes, they're practicing social distancing. They're staying at home. They understand how important this is. But when your leader, when your governor, when your president isn't taking this as seriously, people are just not going to as well. And so I've seen folks talking about how they're still holding worshiping services, how they're holding birthday parties. They just recently, made an issue to close down, you know, clubs and bars in Atlanta. But like, this is something that, people are and they aren't. And for this to work, everyone has to practice social distancing.
Yeah. I don't know about you. I look at the coronavirus tracker multiple times a day and I see those numbers going up. I've seen just so far today, more than 100 deaths inside of the United States. And we really do need all hands on deck taking this seriously. And there are just huge gaping voids in leadership. Let's talk about one of those. That would be Donald Trump. So he seems to be indicating, in my view at least, over the past few days, that he's growing, you know, impatient with the sort of some temporary lockdowns in certain states, that he's worried about the economic damage that's being done, at least to Wall Street. And that he seems to be indicating that he wants to get back to business as usual. What do you think about the possibility that even before, in some states like Georgia, serious lockdowns would even be put into effect, that we would be giving guidance from the top that no, everyone should be going back to work. We should start to just accept that, I guess, a lot of people are going to get sick.
That's an utter failure of his leadership. I think that for him to think that we can get back to, I heard that he wants to see things being back to normal near Easter. The fact that we need to be saving lives at this point versus how much money is going to be lost because of these shutdowns. That's why we're doing these shutdowns, is because we want to protect people and save lives. I think that he's in denial of how massive this problem is now. And I was reading reports that the U.S. might become an epicenter of the coronavirus because of the way that Donald Trump and his leadership has been addressing this. And so he needs to be taking it more seriously, and governors all across the country need to be taking it seriously as well.
You know, right now, I believe the Senate is once again debating one of the relief bills. If you were there, if you were engaged in this battle right now, what are some of the things you'd be pushing for that you think could do the most to help people in Georgia that are currently dealing with this?
Absolutely. Along with my mom, who was laid off, many, many people in my community have lost their jobs due to the virus. And right now, they need immediate economic relief. And that means, a check or however way you want to pay people. But they need to be able to have money in their pockets by April 1st so that they are able to pay their rent and in food. People are very worried about, where they're going to get their next paycheck from, because a lot of people aren't able to work right now. These are like making sure that people have money in their pockets is something that I'm very concerned about. Making sure that this happens immediately is something that my constituents have been telling me, future constituents have been telling me that this is what they need right now. Along with, you know, folks are talking about how there needs to be a moratorium on mortgages, on rent, on commercial loans, putting a pause on expenses right now until we figure out how long this pandemic is going to be, is another issue that people have been talking about that we need to do immediately. So these are some of the things that folks in my community have come up to me and talked about to me and said that these are some things that they want to see happening in Congress right now.
And I saw that Nancy Pelosi, she had, as part of the one of the bills that she's working on, she's saying that we need to allocate a few billion dollars to begin to prepare for effectively turning the federal, you know, the elections over in November over to entirely mail-in balloting. Do you think that that's a good precaution to begin to take now?
I don't think that. Look, I think this pandemic, where it's going to get worse, a lot more worse than it gets. What's the saying?
Before it gets better.
Yes, thank you. So I think that's a great precaution to take is to prepare for having to do a mail-in ballot election countrywide. Mm-hmm. I think it's people are going to be in a situation where we're going to be able to vote in person in November. So I think that's a good precaution to take.
So I want to make sure, especially under these conditions, that people can continue to follow your campaign. Normally we ask, you know, where people can find out about your platform or something like that. I know you mentioned that you're also doing these virtual town halls. So if people in your area are interested in taking part in that, how would they find out more about those?
So we'll be posting on Twitter on how to get involved on how to jump on a virtual town hall with me. So at Nabila, FORGA07. We're still working out on the details on what platform we're going to use to launch this virtual town hall, since it's something that this is new that we're doing. But you can find more information there and also my Facebook as well.
Okay. Nabila Islam, candidate in Georgia's 7th District. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.